Спасибо, Руслан. Извините меня, я чисто русского языка в школе, но сегодня я говорю по-английски. It is a great honor for me, also for my wife and our daughter, who is here, to be present at this event in honor of my father's masterwork, The New Industrial State, on the 50th anniversary of its publication. I share in full the sentiments of Professor Bodrunov, expressed to me in a letter that the ideas in my father's work and in this book specifically are, as he said, relevant as ever and need to be developed from the standpoint of the new situation in the global economy. The critical idea in the work is that the strength of a successful economy, such as the United States was at that time, lay not in magical markets, but in broadly effective organizations able to master the technical, financial, and marketing aspects of advanced production and operating in an environment of effective outside constraint, of regulation from the public, the government, unions, consumers, the academy, and other elements of civil society, or what my father called the concept of countervailing power. From this viewpoint, the problem in the USSR was not the absence of markets, but the vast scale of limited adaptive capacity of the productive units, so that introducing free markets brought collapse rather than improvement, and from collapse there followed many other ills, including internal looting and external predations. Meanwhile, in the United States, the incursion of external planning systems, younger, better developed in certain respects, better adapted to new global conditions, first from Japan and Korea, elsewhere, along with a radical re-empowerment of big finance, of the great banks, and the related breaking off of technology firms into independently capitalized units, produced a hollowing out of the old industrial sectors, which had regional political consequences, which are in very large part responsible for the rise in American politics of such a figure as Donald Trump. If I had to say where the new industrial state survives best in the world, I would name Germany and Japan, both places where my father's influence in one way or another was and remains extraordinarily strong. A planning system, as my father described it, requires a technostructure, a trained, secure, advanced, and diverse class of engineers, managers, designers, lawyers, much else, working together on terms of relative equality and shared responsibility. It is a mark of decay when one sector or another, finance or high technology, gains a power advantage over all the others and skews the income distribution, which in turn devalues the specialties that a system of effective and balanced organization requires, makes them difficult to renew and to replace, which is a phenomenon that is easily visible in the United States and elsewhere in its effects, among other things, on our universities. A planning system requires a competent, autonomous, detached state capable of exercising regulatory power, of setting and enforcing standards. The mark of an advanced, as opposed to a developing country, is, I would argue, not education, not technology, at least not those things alone, not even necessarily infrastructure, important though it is. So much of it is the capacity to set and to enforce effective standards. It was well known this was a problem for consumer products under socialism. China solved this problem in part, although not for its environmental aspects, by importing standards from the West. The rise of Scandinavia over the 20th century owes much to wage standards enforced by comprehensive trade unions that encouraged the upgrading of technology in the industrial system. It is a mark of decay when corporate or other lobbies seize control of the regulators and tear up the rules, for it means that they prefer the short-term profits that come from degrading the system to the rewards of the hard work required to win under effective and progressive rules. What must be done? I'm told that the phrase in Russian is «что делать». I think in both our countries we must begin to seek once again to understand what our requirements are and to begin to meet them. I do believe that the study of complex organizations and of the their relationship to state, to labor, to science, technology, and to finance is a foundational task. It will help to replace a barren economics with something that is constructive, something that gives value to useful knowledge over the empty intellectual and academic games that have too long and too far dominated the development of ideas and the advancement of careers in the economics profession. That's the first step. But beyond this, what we must all do, what each country must do, is to make a strategic assessment, an assessment which is openly arrived in a democratic setting, and I think this meeting is a nice example of the effort to do this, freed of the domination of bankers, of oligarchs, or of the state, in order to find a way forward on which the broad base of civil society can come to agree. To effect such an assessment, to make it work, the distortions of vast inequalities which concentrate power must be kept in check. Ruslan Greenberg asked me to address this question. What is the issue that is raised by the problem of inequality? I would say that question was answered by Adam Smith, who wrote, "Wealth is power, as Mr. Hobbes says." This is the issue. Whether the society can be framed and its progress can be framed by a broad consensus resting on the panoply of concerns and requirements that must be balanced, or whether it will be directed too narrowly by concentrated interests. One thing that my own research reveals is that the world's successful democratic societies are relatively egalitarian, relatively open. They are not run by billionaires and generals. And finally, a word close to my father's heart and to mine. I served for 20 years as chair of an organization called Economists for Peace and Security, with many close friends and colleagues amongst the economists and academicians in this country. Nothing works without peace. War, as John Maynard Keynes wrote, is the ultimate consumer of hopes and dreams and possibilities. In this age, we are tightly bound, interlinked, and at risk as perhaps never before. We must find a way to respect space, distance, difference, to overcome mistrust, and above all, to recognize that each people has a sovereign right to work out its own problems. I say this with reference to all countries, but especially to the relationship between ours. And I come back to a sentence that my father wrote, and which was spoken in the inaugural address of President John F. Kennedy in 1961. That sentence reads, "We must never negotiate from fear, but we must never fear to negotiate." Thank you. Спасибо, спасибо большое.